Welcome to China Manufacturing Decoded from Sofeast, the podcast where we take you through some of the major topics facing importers and manufacturers in China today. Hi again, listener. You are tuned into episode 27 of the podcast. Adrian from Sofeast here. I'm catching up with Renault today about in-depth due diligence of your Chinese suppliers. This is part 9 of our mini-series on vetting new Chinese suppliers. And this time, we're going to be looking in more detail at what you should be looking at to understand the health and the risks involved with dealing with certain suppliers. This is particularly important at the moment where, of course, many importers haven't been able to travel to China to check up on how their suppliers are doing. So how are they doing financially? What sort of risks do they pose if they're not abiding by certain regulations? This and more is what we're getting into in today's podcast.
Hi, Renault, you good?
Hey, great. Yeah. How about you?
Yes, not too bad. Thank you. Thanks for catching up with me today as usual. Today's episode, actually, we're continuing on with the China supplying vetting mini series. This is part 9 of that. I'll leave a link to the other ones in the show notes. And today's topic is in-depth due diligence. And there's been an element of due diligence kind of running throughout all of these podcasts in this mini series, because of course we're vetting suppliers. But as we were discussing earlier, this is quite timely because of the pandemic. I think a lot of buyers and importers out there haven't been able to visit suppliers in China. Maybe they've been relying on speaking to them online, on the phone, maybe sometimes, but it's possible they don't know exactly how they're doing as a business. Are there any issues that could be coming in the future that they're just not aware of? And that's where the kind of in-depth due diligence that I'd like you to talk about with me today really comes into it. So continuing on with what I've said, I mean, why is this so important in your mind at the moment?
Well, there's quite a few distressed companies in China these days, and some of them might be a key supplier of your company. You know, that's basically what's scary is a lot of factories have lost quite a bit of business. And, you know, sometimes these factories, they have one customer that represents 60%, sometimes 80% of their sales, right? So when things go up to the right and everybody's happy, but in times of trouble, in terms of change, well, the whole situation might get, you know, might become upside down, basically. I mean, there's a case, I don't know, a couple of months ago, I think I talked to this company, and they have a few key suppliers. They really, really want to make sure that they can provide, you know, continuity of supply, that their supply of products or materials will not stop. Otherwise, they're in deep trouble. So they asked us to have a close look at several of their key suppliers. And they were particularly worried about one of them, and for good reason. And I can't disclose the details here, but if one of your suppliers has been working a lot for American customers, for example, you know, and maybe they had one American customer represent 50% of their business. Well, you know, over the past year, that key customer might have gone away, and you might not know about that. I mean, your factory obviously knows about it, the suffering, the downsizing. They might be selling off some equipment, firing people. Of course, they're dealing with it. But are they going to tell you? Are they going to tell their other customers, hey, we're sort of in a tough patch, you know, financially, but, you know, like, stick with us, please, everything will be all right. If that's the case, as a customer, if you rely on them for products that you really, really need, then you're going to start looking for a backup. You're going to cultivate a second factory. I mean, it's normal, just to reduce your risk, because suddenly the risk of dealing with this sole supplier has gone up a lot. So you want to to dual source. We want to have two sources for these products, right? So these manufacturers, they know that, and they're not stupid. They're not going to tell their customers, oh yeah, it's not going so well, you know, because yeah, one, it signals a higher risk, and as I said, that's not good for business. And second, some buyers might try to take advantage of it and say, well, you know, it's not so good for us either. I mean, we're going to have to cut costs a bit. You know, you have to reduce your price another 5%. Otherwise, we can't keep doing it. And they know that the factory is desperate, right? So they can push hard. So usually manufacturers say, yeah, it's all right. You know, yeah, we have some exciting new developments. And right. Many of them, they say these kind of things to hide the true situation when things go wrong, when things are really going bad. Now, 2020, you know, since March, people are not really traveling around. So where before you had maybe your director of operations or purchasing director fly to China every couple of months, see how everything is going, you know, fill out the key suppliers, go have a look, you know, compare notes about that last time, see if the boss, you know, purchased a new car. I mean, you know, if they invested in new equipment, all these kind of things. Actually, we talked about it a bit on this podcast before. It's the sort of subjective evaluation a little bit. And you really need to keep your finger on the pulse of the key suppliers, the suppliers that you really don't want to go under, right? So people are not traveling, so a lot of people have no idea and are actually pretty worried. You know, hey, this whole trade war, has it impacted our suppliers? You know, are they booming? Maybe they are in the business of providing, you know, home office equipment or kitchen equipment or something like that. They might be booming, or gym equipment, or, you know, or conversely, they might be way too exposed because maybe they were making products that were for traveling, right? And the business might be down 95%. So what's going on? You know, what's going on with their customers? Maybe some of their other customers have been impacted. So all of these things that's why, as you said, it's quite timely. People don't really know what's going on. And even if you have some staff in China, they might not want to travel to certain areas. Some companies here have implemented some pretty strict measures, and they told their staff, hey, you're not going out of the office, you're not going running around, except for this and this and this type of very serious issues. Otherwise, you don't go out. So even companies that have their own buying office here don't necessarily know, right?
That's so interesting.
It's quite a bit of opacity, you know, the lack of information. That's the right situation.
Well, I guess it's partly cultural and partly being in the West or in the rest of the world and not being so exposed to what's going on for real in China. Because, you know, coming from somebody that's in Europe as I am, if I read the news about China, for example, it sort of seems like everything's fine there, and they're saying, you know, that the economy is rebounding and people seem to be living a relatively normal life, and you don't hear about anything like that you just spoke about, where there are still restrictions and things like this. Well, not a lot anyway.
Well, you don't hear about it in the news. However, if you purchase products from, you know, 5, 10, 20 Chinese suppliers, you can feel something is wrong with some of them. You know, some of them are really trying desperately to get more business. Some of them are ready to give special pricing. You know, come on. Otherwise, we need to tell the staff to tell the operators to go on holiday because we have nothing for them. You know, come on. So I think a lot of purchasers can feel that something is not going right with some factories. Now, some other factories are booming. It certainly exists. There's everything.
Sure. Okay. So if we're going to look in more detail at our suppliers, then what are the kind of activities that, for example, here at Sofist that we'd normally be doing, or what are the sort of points that we'd be focusing on?
Right. So it really depends on the objectives of the client. If the, let's say that the client is going to, wants us to qualify some potential suppliers, right? They haven't started yet to work with a certain manufacturer, maybe to make their new product, or maybe it's, you know, it's, it requires quite a bit of training of the factory, or maybe just they're going to pay a lot of money. You know, they really want to have a good look into that supplier, and making sure that it doesn't represent very high risks, right? So there's different things, sort of a little high level list. There's several things. The financials of the company. Well, and of course, all the basic due diligence we already covered in a previous episode, right? This is a little bit, you know, more advanced, more in-depth sort of due diligence. So you can easily see who are the owners, you know, is it one boss, is it several owners, is it, or for example, earlier this year, there was a company, a trading company saying, yeah, this is a big state-owned enterprise, you know, they make this PPE products, it's very safe, don't worry. And we check, and what you see, it's you know, it's a state-owned enterprise, it's privately owned by some individuals. And we're like, no, but you know, in China, it's just the way it is, you know, it's controlled by the government, but like, you know, it's actually on the paper, if you just look at the paper, you know, it's owned by people, but actually blah, 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 blah. Okay, this is just a huge red flag. I'm sorry, that doesn't happen. So you can look who are the owners. You can make sure, you know, whether they are the manufacturer or they don't manufacture. Now, do they manufacture your products? You need to do factory visits for that. In terms of the financials, and again, okay, the financials cannot be obtained everywhere in every city, unfortunately. But there are often ways to get the high level financials. You can see, you know, simple things. You know, are they growing? Are they making money? Or have they been losing money? Maybe they've been losing money for a long time. They have some debt. They might have some more debt with maybe some of their suppliers. It's off the books, but you know, it might be sort of unofficial. Now that, yes, exists in China, unfortunately, sort of the local mafia. You can contract debts, but you really don't want that to come and bite you, because it can be pretty nasty. So all this represents extra risks, of course. And I mean, and if it's with the suppliers, if they owe a lot of money to the suppliers, that's the worst from a buyer's point of view, because the supplier is just going to say, hey, here's the materials you need, you know, just take it and like, don't even think of sending it back if you don't like it. If you don't like it, you will work it. You know, it's like, you know, don't try to get tough on us on quality standards. You know, this is what we deliver to you, period, right? And you're not really in a situation where you can push them to be faster, to be better. So it impacts the quality of the final product pretty bad, actually. Yeah, were there some changes in the owners? If it's a relatively new company, have they transferred all of the capital? Because you have a certain period of time to do that. If not, why? You know, there's a lot of things like that around the financials. I'm not going to go really in depth into that, but when you look into it, you can have a lot of questions. And typically this is best accompanied with an on-site visit, looking at the operations, basically, you know. So you say this so this building, you own it, okay, and this and this, and so you know, oh, you're renting it, a part of it, so you know, you were occupying the whole building 2 years ago, so your business has gone down, or what's going on, you know? So there's a lot of smart questions you can ask, and you can get a lot of information. Factory people don't really like that. It's like being naked. Generally speaking, they don't really like transparency, you know, having buyers know as much as they know is not something they like.
Sure.
You can also look at, you know, the processes they have in house and everything, and think of the regulations that apply. Now that's different from the financials, but for example, I remember that this factory that was making eyewear, metal glasses, and they were operating a paint shop, so they were painting, a powder coating, right? So, and the paint shop, so you need a license in China for that, because a paint shop can release a lot of VOCs into the air, you know, can pollute the air and harm the health of the people working there, but also of the whole community around. So this is a special license. And same thing for a lot of these surface treatment processes that tend to be highly polluting. So you have the license for that. Yeah. Okay. But it's in the other building. And, you know, in building C, but this paint shop that we see is in building B. So what's going on? It's fine. You know, the local government, they don't care. Yeah, right. So these guys, it means they can be closed at any time. In a very brutal, you know, like overnight, they can be shut overnight. And these are the kind of things that when you start to look into the details of the papers, it's not uncommon, actually. And anything can happen. Now the suppliers say, it's fine. You know, they have a different tolerance for risk sometimes. Or they just close their eyes. They always think they're lucky and they will get their way out of trouble. However, this is old China, you know. Now the new China of 2020 is not the old China of 1995 or 2005. What was okay back then is less and less okay. And these kinds of little oversights can mean an immediate closure. I mean, the boss could even be sent to jail for that. Mm. And same thing for the staff and the social insurance, you know. Do they actually pay the social insurance, the amount that's supposed to be paid, or are they playing games, you know? And it's not so hard to find out about that if you ask questions, usually, right? If you just go in, you know, you look at the operations, you can number of people, and you see how many people they declare for social insurance. I mean, it's certain things like this are not very complicated, right? Now they will say, oh, we have some part-time, some whatever, some temporary workers for dispatch agencies. Okay, well, you know, dispatch agencies, so you have a contract with them, you know, show it to me, how many people, right? A lot of these things can be checked. Now, of course, if they start to stonewall and to say, well, no, I don't really have the paper, we don't do it with a contract, and these kinds of convenient explanations, well, it's right there, that should be a red flag. Because, hey, when the government comes in, the labor department, to check the payment of the labor insurance, if the factory boss behaves like that, he's going to be in trouble. So this is indicative of a relatively high risk. And of course, profit. I mean, you know, a lot of small and medium-sized manufacturers in China have been doing business under the table. So they get paid, you know, yeah, just pay me on this account in Hong Kong. And then, you know, then it disappears somewhere. And and they you know, there's a lot of money going through personal accounts and so on and so forth. Well, and in the end, of course, there's zero tax on profit, which might remind you of President of the United States, right? Doesn't pay any income tax. So, but they, yeah, a lot of people, yes, right, right. a lot of people are playing this game, and some of them are really actually not making any money. That might be the case also of Mr. Trump, but some of them, you know, are making money, but just keeping it far away from the company business account.
Right.
Well, same thing. In the China of 2020, this is getting, you know, more and more difficult to get by with and to get away with. And in the China of 2025, it will be even harder. So, you know, do you want to work with these kinds of people? Do you want to rely on them? They can be shut down anytime. So what we see, the common strategies, a lot of these factory owners that are playing these games, they're very short-term minded. So some of them put all the money in real estate. Okay, this has been the game forever for these people. Some of them think, well, yeah, okay, in Shenzhen, in Hangzhou, in Tianjin, yeah, it's getting tougher. You know, it's harder and harder to skirt the rules. However, I'm going to set up a new factory in my hometown. And like, I'm a local guy over there and I'm bringing some jobs, and it's not a big town, and you know, the officials would be happy and so on. We've seen that, you know, companies, a factory is setting up a new new facility, an entire new different company, of course, new business in a different province, and over time transferring everything over there and shutting down or sort of keeping the original one half dead, just thinking, you know, how to avoid paying taxes, how to avoid paying a lot of money to fire staff, so they need to let attrition do his job and let people go away naturally, or maybe transfer to the new facility, and how to get out of the government's eye. It's it's got to be extremely uncomfortable. I don't know how to do that. I would never do these kind of things. But well, that's the kind of games that we've seen. And it's, you know, as a buyer, again, do you want to work with these kinds of people, right?
Do you think
pretty scary.
Do you think that's also kind of old China, though? Is there a new generation of factory owners or business owners coming through who are way less likely to behave in that way?
That's a good question. It is fading away over time, right? So if you read the sort of the Sun Tzu advice, you know, military advice, so if you go back to Mao and you know, it was all about, hey, I'm gonna show you how smart I am. Like, I'm so smart, I know how to play the game better than you, and I'm not gonna let you catch me. You know, I'm gonna win at the game because I understand the rules and I understand the loopholes around that and so on. And that's old China. So every time you tell them something, then they will have three excuses for you, you know. And they will always keep moving left when you go right, and moving right when you go left. And to me, that's old China. That's very short-term minded. It's always, what am I going to eat tonight? And I don't need to plan for the next 5 years. Who knows what's going to happen? And yes, you know, why pay tax? You know, I know the game better than them. I'm smart enough. I don't need to do that. Why pay social insurance? Why, right? I'm smarter. I'm going to show them I'm smarter, right? That's sort of the old Chinese way. And yeah, and if I get caught, you know, I'll find a way when I get caught, you know, let's see. I'm sure I can always find someone I can pay a bribe to, and I will pretend I'm dumb or whatever, and you know, they won't be too bad on me. So that's the old China, and it was sort of working well for them. Really, I mean, in the 80s, the 90s, the 2000s, we've seen a lot of these people prosper. Now,
sure.
the new China, since Mr. Xi is in power, especially, has been cracking down on them, has been driving a lot of transparency, actually, transparency to the government, right? They have actually made it very clear, right? Clear in the Chinese way, but still very clear. They even lowered the tax, you know, the value-added tax and so on. They lowered the rates a little bit, but at the same time, they enforced in a stronger way, in a much more consistent manner. So they enforce the rules. They you know, we really want you to pay your taxes now. Okay. You know, we know you are not paying everything, and so we know it's going to be, you know, maybe unmanageable. We don't want you to protest too much. So look, we reduce the rates a little bit, but you really have to pay it now. You know, that's sort of the new approach. And if you know, I think the new generation is much less about the old Chinese approach of I'm smarter and I come up with 10 different excuses and I never think about the long term. This over time is going away, fortunately. Fortunately. Now, I'm not saying it's going away very fast. I'm not saying that the guys who made a lot of money with the old way are going out of business. No, I'm not saying that. But over time, the culture is changing. So we'll see more and more professionally run companies, and hopefully less and less of these fly-by-night companies that are still, you know, everywhere in certain sectors.
Sure.
They're everywhere.
Right. And you mentioned the transparency. I mean, this transparency with all of the information that goes to the government, which perhaps they didn't get as well before, before they started sort of zealously trying to get it and make sure everybody's following the right rules and regulations. And of course, digitizing everything, which I think is one of the key things, right? That's also friend of the importer, because as you said, this information, it is out there now, and it's easier to find for, you know, people like accountants or people who are doing due diligence.
Okay, is there much more transparency to importers? I'm not sure about that. I'm waiting to see what the corporate, social credit system, corporate social credit system, what it will look like, whether we'll really be able to see the score of every company, and maybe also with the breakdown of scores, because there's a number of criteria in there. I'm not sure, right? But if that comes into play, that will be a very good risk indicator, actually, to importers. You know, can these guys get in trouble with the government, or are they really above water? So, and this might come into play, you know, early next year. I mean, nobody really knows, because they were saying 2020, but I haven't read anything about it recently. So I don't know when it's coming up. But the personal, you know, the individual corporate, the individual social credit system is already in place, right? It's of course, it's getting refined over time and so on. It might not be very mature yet, but it's in place. So the government is keeping an eye on everybody. And yes, it's digitized, and they have the databases, and they can see everybody, and they can see a lot of data about everybody now. And they want to do the same about the companies. They're putting this in place with the sort of the same philosophy.
Okay.
That's a development to watch.
We did digress a little bit, because you were talking about the list of topics and actions to consider.
Yeah, I went through Yeah, I went through the key things. You know, it's really looking at the operation, see what happened, what's changing, and so on. It's looking at the financials and trying to get some good questions to ask and to go deeper into what really happened. But the problem with the financials is that it's really looking in the back view mirror. However, for people who want to know what happened in 2020, well, they're going to have to wait until 2021 to know about that, right? And that's a problem. It's not forward looking. So that's why you also at the same time want to go on site and look at different things. The respect of regulations, all the regulations, that's actually an important one in China, because it's not a given. It's not a given, and they can get shut down anytime. But these are the big things I wanted to mention. Then obviously it is also very industry specific and product specific. Earlier this year, a lot of people were asking us about PPE, you know, masks and gloves and things like that. And we did some of that, some of the companies. And frankly, it was a bit scary. But then you also look into the, do they have the right certifications for that? Are the certifications actually, you know, valid? Are they in the right class of product? Why don't they want to give us the test reports that come with it? You know, there's something they're hiding and all these kind of things. And that was an example, but it's usually relatively industry specific.
Right, okay.
Because the sources of risk are different.
Makes sense. Yeah, you mentioned going into the factory. I mean, just as a quick note, we did discuss what actually goes on when you go into the factory in one of the early episodes of this series. So I'll add the link to that. That's an absolute heap of stuff that you can look into in depth with this type of due diligence. Is there anything that it's either difficult or just not possible to find out during these kind of activities that would still be useful to know about?
Wow. Well, when you run into one of these fly-by-night companies that are doing a lot of business under the table, hiding a lot of things, it's near impossible to actually see the full picture, right? So what you want to see is the risks, is the serious risks. Now, how much in depth do you want to go? You know, are you going to invest in them? Are you going to do a joint venture with them? Okay, then you need to get a lawyer involved to check basically everything. You know, do they say that this land belongs to them and it's okay for building a factory? Well, check it up. You know, is this building even built on their land? You know, check it up. Don't trust anything, right? But if you just go at it as a buyer, as a potential buyer, what really is important to you? You don't want them to shut down. So you want to see that they have invested and keep investing in the facility and in the people, in the systems. This is, you know, anything that's indicative of long-term thinking is very, very good. It's a very good sign. You know, relatively healthy financials will help keeping them afloat, keeping them focused on the long term, obviously. And, you know, who's the boss? Is this the majority owner? Is it, you know, is he going to retire soon? What's going on? This might give you some ideas. You know, who are the professional managers? What's their background? Are they, you know, are they in it for the long term also? Or is there a chance that they might all have rotated in the next 2 years, right? So many things you want to look at. I mean, and obviously you want to go look at their own suppliers if possible, because they also rely on 1, 2, 3 key suppliers. And same thing here. if these ones are fly by nights that might disappear anytime, well, that's not good. That's another risk, right? You can also look at cost control and efficiency in general. And if you see some very bad practices, well, you know that either you, probably you're going to pay too much, basically, and they're still going to be complaining that they don't make any money. That might be a problem, especially in the mid to long run. You know, how long have you been making this kind of product? They're familiar with your country's standards and how to test for them and what's really important and everything. You know, there's so many things you can check. It's more of an art, right? Can't really reduce it to a formula. It's again, filling them out is a part of it, right? And good old hard-nosed investigation might be the other side of the coin. You can't just trust everything you're told. It's just the way it works. If that makes sense.
Yeah, it does. Well, I mean, that's why we're doing the due diligence in the first place. It's all about reducing risk and knowing what's going on. To finish up and to bring it back to the start of this episode, when you mentioned if you're finding that one of your suppliers maybe is in a bit of trouble or they are likely to cause you risks that are maybe just not acceptable, is there some information you can give? You know, what are your thoughts on keeping a backup factory ready to go? So, I mean, if I'm a responsible buyer, what do I need in order to quickly pivot to a new supplier?
So if you rely on one key supplier for a certain product or material, basically your supplier to your customer stop, you know, nearly the day when this supplier folds, right? When they shut down. Or you might have some extra stock, but that's extra inventory, but that's sort of a waste of money. So that's costing you money and taking up some of your capital just to address this risk, but still. So that's the risk, right? Discontinuity of supply. And it is compounded by the fact that it's going to take maybe 6 months, maybe 1 year to develop the same product with another manufacturer. So not only do you lose your supplier and you're like, oh, okay, we cannot get products now, but and we have 2 months of inventory, okay, but it's going to take 6 months to train a new supplier, and then they're going to be producing and then shipping it to us. So we're looking at maybe 8 months or more. So what do we do, right? If this risk is not tolerable, you definitely have to develop a backup supplier. Now, also, the problem with the backup supplier, there's a few problems with that. First, of course, it takes resources to develop that. Second, you're not just going to, you know, develop them and then put them on ice and get them ready to start whenever you want. You're going to maybe give them a little test run and then another order, and then from time to time another order just to make sure they don't forget, right? So now you're managing two suppliers. And the original supplier might find out about that. Who knows? Maybe they have to buy from the same component supplier. Maybe you know, there is a risk that the main supplier, let's call it this way, learns about that and feels betrayed. That's often how they feel in that case, and start to act in an unreasonable manner, right? So this is that's a little bit of the downside of a backup factory. Another downside is that maybe your designs are highly confidential, and hey, you're basically teaching another supplier, another company, how to make it, right? So you might be training a new competitor if really, you know, your products are relatively unique and it might be very tempting for them to make your same products and sell them maybe to your competitors or maybe directly, maybe on Amazon or whatever. So you have to weigh the pros and cons. Sometimes it's a very easy decision, sometimes it's not. But at least you should think about it and plan for it.
Okay. That's good to know. I mean, I guess this is a topic that we could go into on its own in another episode in the future. But yeah, it's definitely something to be aware of. There is a blog post you've written on backup factories in the past. So I will throw the link to that into the show notes just in case everybody wants to read a little bit more. So yeah, good chat about due diligence there. I think that's a detailed look at what people should be considering doing, and especially today when it's possible that you don't have an extremely deep understanding of exactly how your suppliers or key suppliers indeed might be doing.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
Brilliant. Thanks, Renaud. I will catch you for the next one.
All right. Thanks, Adrian. Have a good one.
Thanks for joining us. If you've enjoyed today's podcast, don't forget to like and share, and you can subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and all other places that you get your podcasts from. See you next time.